Welcome to the Growing with Nature podcast. I'm your host, Darren Williams, permaculture enthusiast, restoration ecologist, and founder of Growing with Nature. Too often, we hear that the best thing we can do for nature is to leave it alone. But people are a part of nature, and you can make the living world around you come alive with abundance for people, plants, and wildlife, even in your own backyard. Join me on a journey through regenerative soil building, permaculture, restoration ecology, and more. To learn concrete steps you can take at home to support wildlife, grow incredible, delicious food, and help heal our living world right in your own backyard. Ready to get started? Grab a shovel, roll up your sleeves, and let's make the living world around you come alive.
In this episode, we're going to look at the native lupins of Western Washington and why you should grow them. And with over 200 species of lupins found in North and South America, and in Northern Africa and the Mediterranean, there could easily be native lupins where you live too. Let's dive into these fantastic native lupins. I've always loved the beauty of lupins. There is something about their tall flower stalks that I just like. And I think my inner kid just loves that they make what looks a lot like pea pods. It's fun to split them open when they're dry and remove the little black and gray seeds. But often, the lupins that people grow are cultivar varieties that have been developed to have a specific color or other feature. And this often means that people are only growing a few types of lupins. But there are over 200 lupins, with most found in the Americas, but some also found in Southern Europe and Northern Africa. And here in Western Washington, for example, there are actually 10 different types of native lupins. You know, make sure you check out the show notes. I've listed all 10 there. And there's more in Eastern Washington. I mean, there's just so many of these fantastic plants. And they come in a wide range of sizes and growth types. You know, there's this little annual bicolor lupin that grows only a few inches tall. And then there's the decent-sized riverbank lupin, which grows as a small woody shrub. You know, and this is why I want you to look into native lupins in your area. All these lupins fix nitrogen, they support wildlife, and with so many different species of lupins, you can likely find ones that will fit your own growing spaces. You know, I'm even exploring adding some native lupins to my vegetable garden. There's this really short-growing lupin found on our beaches in this area, and you know, only grows a few inches tall. Could be a great option to grow in a vegetable garden. You know, so let's look at why you should grow native lupins and how to get the most benefits from them. But before we do, I want to take a quick moment to read a recent review we got on Apple Podcasts from Chia D. She says, "Growing with nature has gotten me back into centering natives and perennials in my yard and garden after a 15-year hiatus. Thank you for the blog, tip sheets, videos, and podcasts. I'm learning so much and the yard and garden is more alive and vibrant than ever." You know, thank you so much, Chi. I'm so glad you're finding the information useful, and it's great to hear that you're planting natives and perennials in your yard and garden. And, you know, hearing that you're getting back into this after a 15-year hiatus just really makes me smile, really makes me happy. And, you know, getting people to do this sort of thing is why we do this. So thank you very much for your review. And if you like what you hear today, you know, then please leave a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever else you listen. Your review will help more people find us. People like you who want to bring these skills home to enjoy wildlife, grow more food, and help heal our living world. Okay, let's get started. The first native lupins that I grew were the bigleaf lupin and riverbank lupin. While these are both lupins and both are found in the lowlands around the Puget Sound, they grow very differently. Bigleaf lupins look a lot like the lupins sold in most big box store nurseries. The flowers are a bit less showy, but many of the cultivars are actually hybrids that include bigleaf lupins in their ancestry. You know, these lupins get big leaves, hence their name, and they can reach several feet up, you know, upwards of a meter in height. But they also die back every fall. You know, riverbank lupins, on the other hand, grow over several years, getting large woody stems that kind of bend and contort, almost like a contorted filbert. And when I say they grow over several years, I mean they're evergreen. They don't die back every winter. And, you know, the riverbank lupin's flowers, they're nice, but they're a little less showy, too. They tend to be smaller. But they are short-lived perennials. They only last a few years, but they volunteer easily, so they tend to replace themselves, so it's really not a problem. And, you know, these two types really show how different native lupins can be. I grow a lot of both of these, along with some broadleaf lupins, which are actually very similar to the bigleaf lupins. their flowers are a different color, but their growth patterns are very similar. And like I mentioned earlier, I'm also looking at growing seashore lupins in my vegetable garden because they tend to stay short, to the ground, with small flower stalks getting up to around 6 inches in height. It's an experiment. I'm not sure if it's going to work or not, but I want to give them a try. They could really be a great option to add between my tomatoes and other tall veggies. And as a perennial nitrogen fixer, that could be a really great thing to boost my other veggies. But there are even more native lupins here in Western Washington and many more in other regions. So what types of native lupins are you going to grow? Definitely look up the ones that grow in your area, give them a try. And again, check out the show notes. I put a list of all the native ones to Western Washington in there. One of the main reasons why I grow lupins is how good they are at supporting wildlife. Native pollinators just love them. Bumblebees especially seem to really love our native lupins. But many other species of insects and other wildlife rely on lupins. One really awesome feature of lupins is that they tend to have hollow stems. And the ones like the big leaf lupins and the broadleaf lupins, that die back every fall, they leave behind all those, old hollow stems, and they tend to get dry, kind of woody in some ways, almost like a sunflower stalk, but they're a little smaller than that, but, just really great hollow stems. And these stems, I find, tend to last a year or so before breaking down. And being hollow, they make great homes for native bees and other beneficial insects. Think about how those, mason bee homes you can buy, those little, boxes you can buy, they always have a bunch of hollow tubes in them. There's instructions how to make them too, but they're always kind of the same. There's a box with a whole bunch of hollow tubes in them. Plants like lupins, for example, they have hollow stems, so they're providing homes for native bees naturally. They're the type of plant that native bees, mason bees, would naturally use. But often people are removing all the dead stems from their garden and from their growing areas. So, instead people put up these boxes, which is a great option. I'm not saying you shouldn't do that, but also, consider leaving the hollow stems behind from plants like lupins, because that's the natural home for mason bees and other types of native bees. There's so many types. And since we've been doing this, leaving behind all these hollow stems, we're just getting tons and tons of native bees. Other plants like elderberries are also great at doing this too, but lupins really are a great option. Because of this, I always leave the old flower stems from my lupins. Some I leave standing straight up. The ones that fall over into my paths, I cut them partway down. I leave as much as I can. But all those pieces that I do end up cutting that fall over into the paths, those all get just laid on the ground around the lupins and my other plants. This is a great way to provide a ton of habitat without much effort. And, once the native lupins are established, this is also free because they self-seed, so you're always going to have lupins in your area, and you can chop and drop them or just leave the stems standing where they are if they're not falling into your paths. And you're always providing great wildlife habitat. Plus all those cut stems help keep the soil covered and basically work as mulch. And, so between the flowers and, the seeds too, because critters will eat the seeds of the lupins, but between the flowers, the seeds, and then all these hollow stems, they just really do support a ton of wildlife. But providing an abundance of chop and drop mulch is just a minor part of how native lupins can help you build soil. All lupins are in the legume family, just like beans and peas. This is why lupin flowers and seed pods and lupin seed pods look so much like peas. They're all kind of related in the same family. And just like other legumes, native lupins also fix nitrogen through a relationship with soil microbes found in little nodules on the roots of the lupins. But lupins take soil building a step further. They also tend to get massive taproots that can be several inches across and go down deep into the ground. Smaller lupins will, of course, have smaller roots, but this is a big reason why I like the riverbank lupins. Riverbank lupins grow for several years before they die, and during that time, they can reach the size of a small shrub, they get woody stems, and they really do get a huge, large, woody taproot. When my riverbank lupins die, I just cut them off at the ground, and I leave that massive taproot behind to rot in the soil. This can be an amazing way to not only add nitrogen to the soil, but also break up compacted soil and add organic material deep, deep into the soil. Riverbank lupin tap roots can easily go down for several feet and likely much, much further. You know, I've only been able to find them down several feet. I wouldn't be surprised if they reach 10 or plus feet. And between, you know, fixing nitrogen, getting these large tap roots, and providing chop and drop mulch, you know, there really are few plants I like better, that I like more than lupins for building, you know, healthy soil. Lupins just really do a, you know, really amazing job at building healthy soil. They can, you know, they just do so good at helping to break up compacted soil, adding organic material deep down to the ground, fixing nitrogen, and just also providing mulch on the, by chop and dropping them. I mean, they just really are a great all-around soil-building plant. So are you ready to try growing native lupins on your property? To help you get started, I've included some links in the show notes to resources for finding native plants, including lupins, and a list of native lupins found in Western Washington. You know, unfortunately, I don't know all the lupins that grow in other areas, but there's a ton out there. You know, there's different ones that are famous. I know in Texas, there's a lupin that's, I think, is a state flower, or at least well, very well known. And there's just, but other places too, there's just so many different types. I've looked up a few when I've given talks in different places, and I can almost always find native lupins that grow in the area. And generally, their seeds are pretty easy to find, and the plants are pretty easy to find. So make sure to check them out. And once you've found some native lupins you want to try, you know, getting started tends to be easy. You know, lupins grow easily from seed, and this is often the best way to get started with them. Each type of lupin will be different, but I've had a lot of luck with spreading lupin seeds in early fall over bare soil. Just broadcast them over the surface of soil and press them down, but don't worry about burying them. The point of pushing them down is to make sure they have good soil contact. You know, sometimes I found if I don't do this, some of them, the little first little root comes out and it just doesn't get down in the soil and it just kind of dies. So getting them good soil contact will just increase your success. And depending on what type of lupin you're planting and your climate, they might even germinate that same fall, you know, and just stay as these little seedlings through the winter, and come spring, they'll just take off. But some types won't germinate until the spring, but all that cold, wet winter, you know, will really help break down the coating on the seeds, making it easier for them to germinate when the weather warms. You know, some native plants really have to be broadcasted or sown in the fall, and that they have to go through that winter cycle to really be able to germinate. But I've also had luck with soaking lupin seeds overnight in lukewarm water and then sowing them in the spring. You know, I do it, the soaking is in the spring, and then the very next day, you know, I'll just broadcast them at, you know, I don't let them dry out. You know, so make sure you try both approaches, see what works. You know, some are going to do fine with a spring sowing if you do that soaking treatment. Some are going to need to sit through the winter. You know, some, like the riverbank lupins, they do great with either a fall or spring sowing. But other lupins may be more picky, you know, about what they need to germinate. So you're going to have to experiment, try it out. Hopefully whoever has the seeds that you're buying from will be able to tell you, too, about what those seeds need. You can also sometimes buy native lupins from native plant nurseries as like little plants, but they're not likely to all survive due to how big the tap roots they get. You know, if you want to go down this route of buying individual plants, make sure to look for very young plants. You know, I've seen newly germinated lupin seedlings when I was thinning some of mine, you know, that they had roots that were already going down 6 inches and they didn't even have their true leaves yet. They're just barely germinated, just growing, you know, just little seed, tiny little seedlings, but they're already down 6 inches. So, you know, this is just an example about how big of roots these plants get. So make sure if you're going to plant individual plants, which I have done this when I couldn't find seeds for some species, because it's really easy to save seeds. So sometimes I will buy individual plants. But if you do this, you know, make the younger you can get, the better. You don't want big plants in big pots. You want little plants, little plugs or bare roots potentially if they're young. You know, as far as where to grow native lupins, you know, I really like planting them around my fruit trees and other perennial plants. You know, as nitrogen fixers, they can really help your other plants grow. They make great support plants. This makes them a great addition to any food forest. But smaller lupins can also be a great option mixed in between smaller plants. Lupins come in a lot of different sizes, so see what the ones in your area are like and mix them in where you can. You know, there's even a lupin tree that grows down in Mexico. and don't hesitate to chop and drop them once they're established. Lupins tend to fit best with other plants when they're treated as a support plant for your other plants. You know, I chop and drop mine once in the spring and again after they're done flowering in the summer. You know, native lupins are really great plants, and if you live in the Americas, Southern Europe, or Northern Africa, I highly recommend giving them a try. And make sure you stay tuned for our next episode, where I'm going to share some lessons I've learned after dealing with drought and extreme heat this summer.
All right, I hope you enjoyed that episode, and thank you for listening to the Growing with Nature podcast. This podcast is made possible thanks to our patrons over on patreon.com. Thank you, patrons, for supporting our work. And if you like what you hear, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever else you listen. Your review will help more people find us, people like you who want to bring these skills home to support wildlife, grow food, and help heal our living world. Well, that's all for now. See you next week, same time, same place. Have a great week, and keep on growing.